Counting by Sevens by Holly Goldberg Sloan. As you listen to today's Read Aloud podcast, please think about what role you have in our discussion for Friday. If you need to have a notebook or sketchbook nearby to write or draw notes to help you remember questions you might have or vocabulary words you're describing or a summary of the text that you're looking to provide, please go gather those now. Chapter 57. I open my eyes. I can hear May's soft breathing above me in the bunk bed, but otherwise the apartment is silent. That's unusual. The world of Patty Gwen is always noisy. Meals are always being cooked, dishes washed, the vacuum or shower running. But not now, because it's really early. Dell took me to dinner last night to Happy Greens, which is a vegetarian restaurant. He was trying to cheer me up. He told me that they were working on some kind of arrangement. When we got back to the gardens, I did my best to look happy. I look at the clock. It is 4:27 a.m. Kwang Ha is asleep on the couch. The shades in the living room are drawn on the two windows facing the street. The full moon is right above the skylight, and the glow is enough to cast little shadows on the carpet. In the past, I saw these shapes as hopeful. Now they appear to be stains. I take my pillow and the fuzzy blanket from my bed, and I go sit in the bathroom. A few minutes later, Cheddar slinks in. He curls up on the edge of the blanket and falls asleep, leaning against my back. There is a window in here, and from my position in the corner on the cold tiles, I watch the sunrise bathe the world in orange light. Stars littering an endless Bakersfield sky begin to dim. I close my eyes, and finally, as I drift back to sleep, the screen of my mind fills with hummingbirds. They understand the importance of motion. I wake up a few hours later and have no idea where I am. It takes a moment, which feels like eternity, but is in reality less than a second, to process that I'm in the bathroom and that I won't live at the Gardens of Glenwood after today. That's the thing about time. A second can feel like forever if what follows is heartbreak. I am very, very tired, but I take a shower and wash my hair. I let it dry the way it wants to, which is in a mass of dark curls. I'm not pulling it back or putting in a braid or getting it under control. It is what it is. I am what I am. I put on my old gardening outfit. I put the acorn that May gave me into my pocket. Maybe it will be lucky. I've gotten this far. That says something. I'm not going to wear my red hat because I'll be indoors, but I will carry it with me because red is a lucky color and very important in the natural world. It is business as usual at breakfast. I take a banana, which is covered in brown spots. It looks like the skin of a giraffe. I wish that I were old enough to just go live in the Amazon and study plants there because it is possible that one of them holds the key to the cure for cancer. But the obstacles are insurmountable. I don't even have a passport. We are trying to eat when Dell comes down the hall earlier than usual. He and Patty say they are getting something from the car, and they go to the carport. I am certain that they are talking about my situation. They come back after a few minutes and only say that we have to leave, or May will be late for the first bell. I ask Patty what will happen at the hearing. She says that I shouldn't worry. I don't think this is much of an answer. Who wouldn't be worried? But what's worse is I know her now. I spend a big part of her day with her, and so I can see by the expression on her face that she's worried too. May wants to go to the hearing in the courthouse this afternoon. I say to her, "You don't have to be there. You're supposed to be in school. I'm ready for this now. I'm stronger." And then I get up and go to the bathroom. Only minutes later, Lenore arrives. Patty says that this isn't goodbye. It's hen gap lai sao. That means see you later. I say, yes, I will see you all later. I've got to get out of here before there's too much drama. I hug May and I try to be brave, mostly because she's falling apart for the two of us. She's always the toughest person in the room, but with me leaving, her armor cracks. I hug Del, and then I hug Patty. I give Kwang Ha a nod. Then I turn to Cheddar. He's sitting on the back of the couch, and he's watching. I was going to go say goodbye to him. That was my plan, but now I can't do that. I turn away, and I hear the bell on his collar ring. The only thing I can think to say is, please water the plants in the courtyard, especially the pittosporum. I'll be over to check on the garden as soon as I can. I hear May heading out of the room, moving down the hallway. She can't take it. I turn back just before I leave the apartment. Cheddar is under the speckles of colored light from the broken glass on the rooftop. It makes his face all wobbly, or maybe it's just what he looks like through tears. I climb into Lenore's car, and I look up at the building. I see Cheddar now in the window. I whisper, goodbye. I did not say goodbye to my mom or my dad. I never got to do that. They were here, and then they were gone. Does saying goodbye really matter? Does it really end something? I didn't hug them that morning when I left to go to school. That's why I don't want to go back there. I can handle the other kids and the teachers and everything about it, but the memory. I can't be in that place, because every time I allow myself to think about my last days there, I fall apart. I break loose from this world. I fly into a million pieces. I am worried about Kwang Ha. I know that he has lots of homework this week. I hope that he at least attempts to do some of it. And then there is Del. Will he go back to putting things in closets? Will he return to staring out the window and waiting for his life to begin? Will Patty keep working so hard? I know for a fact that those fumes from the nail polish are bad for her. I realize now I'm worrying about all of them. It's better than worrying about myself. This is one of the secrets that I have learned in the last few months. When you care about other people, it takes the spotlight off your own drama. Chapter 58. I'm in a large room with five other girls at Jameson. We all have hearings today. Four of the five girls are sleeping, or at least pretending to. The fifth girl is talking on a cell phone. I have my computer with me, and after I ask three times, the woman at the front desk gives me the wireless password. No one else has a computer. I feel bad using mine, but the other girls don't seem to care. Everyone in this room is in her own bubble of unhappiness, and there's not a lot of sharing. I'm grateful for that. Since I have access to the wireless code, I decide to look at the Jameson system. This system is, of course, protected, but the firewall isn't very secure. I've looked at a lot of code for electronic buffering. It's not a very sophisticated network, because I see the transport layer and I recognize it immediately as something I've gotten through. I'm thinking that not many hacker kids end up here. I'm not a hacker kid, but I have potential in this area. I get in right away. I go to Lenore's account. When I look at her email, I suddenly feel sorry for her. She appears to be massively overworked. There is email from juvenile court, from schools, from the police department. Mountains of the stuff. I see references to all kinds of medical documents. There are reports of abuse and criminal behavior. I feel sick now, in a new way. I really shouldn't be reading those things. It's all too personal, and it's not about me, and what I'm doing is wrong. I have Del's work files on my computer. I transferred everything when I put together his laptop, but I've never actually looked at any of this stuff. Now I open his files called DDSS, and I read Del Duke System of the Strange. 1 equals misfit, 2 equals oddball, 3 equals lone wolf, 4 equals weirdo, 5 equals genius, 6 equals dictator, 7 equals mutant. There are many names in most of the categories. I go through them. Quang Ha is a lone wolf, and Patty is a dictator. I see that Mei is a junior dictator. Then I see that for mutant, there's only one name. Del Duque has listed himself. At first I'm appalled, and then I realize he's only trying to make sense of the world. He's looking for a way to put things in categories. He's seeing people as different species. Of course, he's wrong. All of us are all of those things. I'm no genius. I'm as much of a lone wolf or a misfit or a weirdo as anyone. When it came to the garden, I was a dictator. If there is anything I figured out in the last month, is that you can find labels to organize living things, but you can't put people in any kind of group or order. It just doesn't work that way. I close my computer, and in a handful of minutes, a woman comes into the room to tell us that lunch is being served. I'm not hungry, but I follow the group to the dining area. They don't have much of a selection for vegetarians, but I pick my way through a salad and some spinach with alarmingly bright orange-colored cheese sauce. At least I think it's cheese sauce. It seems better not to ask. Everyone else sitting at my table is having a hot dog. When we are finished, they bring us each a bowl of vanilla ice cream with sprinkles on top. The girl next to me starts to cry when she sees the sprinkles. I'm wondering if she's worried about the long-term side effects of consuming artificial food coloring. It's a valid concern. But I decide she's not crying about that because she picks at it as she weeps. I shut my eyes and do my best to imagine I'm back in the new garden. And then before I know it, my ice cream bowl looks like soup and the colored sprinkles have all sunk. Lenore comes to get me. She says that she likes the way my hair looks today. It hasn't changed since she picked me up, so she might just be trying to think of something positive to say to me, but I smile anyway. I realize that it's a true smile. I will go forward into the world and do my best to be the daughter that my parents would have wanted me to be. I'm not brave. It's just that all the other choices have been thrown out the window. Lenore takes me to see the grief counselor, whose name is Mrs. Bode Ernst. Sitting in her office, I realize that I'm not afraid of anything anymore. Anymore. Exactly 7 letters. Just a coincidence? Not long ago, I had a lot of fear. Now it feels like there's not a lot left to be afraid about. Lenore says, "Today is all just procedure. You will see the judge in private. He might ask some questions. There is paperwork to be signed." Mrs. Bode Ernst smiles, and I understand that she's thinking this is good news, or maybe she's just smiling to be encouraging. I don't share her optimism. The grief counselor says, "The beginning of anything is hard. I know you've been through a lot. We're going to get you into school, and you'll make all kinds of new friends. Before you know it, you're going to be right back in the swing of things." I think about telling her that my school experience was never that great, and besides Margaret Z. Buckle, I didn't have close friends until I met Mei and Quang Ha and lived at the Gardens of Glenwood. But I don't want to upset her. How could she know that I never had that kind of swing? Lenore and I return to her car. She explains that the judge will take legal responsibility of me. I'm hoping that it will be a woman and a person of color who sees me and understands that I'm different, even strange, as Del Duque figured out, but that I still have value. The court will now call the shots. I can tell that Lenore feels bad right now, but none of this is her fault. I want her to understand. I want to tell her that I'm sorry. Instead, I reach over and touch her arm, just my fingertips. After that, I don't have to say anything. I can tell she understands. I go into the girls' bathroom in the courthouse. I need a few minutes by myself. The mirror here is not made of glass. It's a polyester film coating made with aluminum stretched perfectly flat against a rectangular board. So you can't break this mirror. I'm guessing they think that people who end up here don't need any more bad luck. I open my mouth and stare. Because my skin is dark, my teeth look very white. They are straight, and I think a good size. But they are permanent teeth. There's no hiding it. I shut my eyes. I can always see my smiling mother and my strong father. I hear their words voiced in so many ways since as early as I can remember, trying to protect me. Were they too worried about me to look out for themselves? Or is life so filled with random action that the very notion of caution is futile? If the last few months have proven anything, it's that I don't need more theory, but rather more experience with reality, even though the dose I've received is enough to last a lifetime. When I see the judge, I will try to convey a positive attitude while at the same time monitoring my blood pressure and other vital signs. There have been cases of stress-induced cardiomyopathy, which is also known as broken heart syndrome. And that concludes our reading of Counting by Sevens. Please make sure to take any notes that you need in order to participate in Friday's discussion, whether it be your vocabulary words, your questions, or a summary of everything we have read thus far.